This is episode 23 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
Yet if not for an act of divine intervention, you'd be gone. I'm sorry, Kevin, but these are not the actions of a man who loves his family.
I don't want to kill myself.
Well, you're certainly entitled to your opinion. I'm just glad we finally talked about it.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk about Orange Sticker. Suddenly I'm hitting, it's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone, and your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I absolutely adore everything that they're doing with Patty. I can't get enough.
I
want more and more and more. And I knew this was going to happen to me. I knew that I when I find something that I love, I just freaking latch onto it. And I just want more.
Yeah.
I every single time that Kevin is alone, I'm just waiting and I'm looking for Patty to talk to him. And I'm just waiting for one little bit of nugget each time she says something, because you know she's there for a reason. She's not there to just highlight what they're talking about. She's not there to just give a little bit more perspective. What she's saying actually has meaning.
Yeah.
It actually has meaning. There, it's not just a voiceover. It's not just all that crap. She is there for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been dying for this to happen. Let me just breathe this one out.
All right, do it. There you go. Well, while you're breathing, I want to know your Damon rating.
My Damon rating?
Yeah.
My Damon rating is 4.5 Damons.
Oh, look at you. How come?
I'm giving this one of the highest ratings I've given so far for this season because of everything that it included. First of all, we got back to Miracle. Thank you so much for this. I love getting back to Miracle. All the amount of Patty that happened, I will take that left and right. In fact, if they just have a show, a spinoff show about Patty and Kevin and them just hanging out like smoking butts, drinking beers, I'd be happy with that.
Yes.
And the story that they have is compelling. It was suspenseful. It had some love and humor. It had everything. In fact, I would probably say this has been the most complete episode of The Leftovers this season so far. And that, to me, is high praise. How about
yes.
you?
I'm going to give it 4. And I'm going to take it from your 4.5 down to 4 because there was one scene in particular that I didn't really understand.
Which was that?
Why did Kevin go with John? Why? Why was John driving there late at night, said, get in my car? So we'll talk about this more.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we were there because it was a Kevin story and because we were with Kevin the entire time and they needed Kevin to go to John's. But I feel like I've already been in the Murphy's shoes, so I don't need Kevin to be the storyteller. So I don't know why we went to Isaac's house with Kevin, why Kevin was there at all.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. But that was the only thing that I was like sitting there saying, okay, I get this. But I don't get this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only reason. Aside from that, loved it. Loved the music. I loved the music. Whoever chose the music for this episode did a phenomenal job. It was all like hymnal music and then some pretty cool remixes of pieces.
I know.
So it was like pretty much my heaven. I was like, remixes and church songs.
What about the listeners? What do they got?
Terry Thomas Picnic on Facebook. These are all Facebook people.
No, we got two Facebook. Twitter. Yeah.
Gives it only 3 Damons. It's hard to rate any episode low because we're watching such great TV every week. But so far, Terry thinks that this was the least captivating of the season, especially coming off last week. So she wants to know that she loves Nora and Jill's relationships and that they're good for each other. And then Jean Choi gives it 4 Damons because of several shock moments throughout the episode. Jean still wonders whether the guy atop the clock tower, you know, Dirty Santa, actually saw Patty, or if he simply saw Kevin talking to someone and asked who his friend is. And Matt's story about Mary coming back gave Jean chills. So we're going to talk about Dirty Santa and that whole thing a little bit. And then Rick Diamond gave this 5 Damons on Twitter this episode. Rick says he would give 6, but he's going to hold back for some more upcoming weeks. And I think that's really smart, Rick. I think we're just getting warmed up. So I hear you. I hear you. All right.
You know what? We actually, before we get into what we forget, we have 2 very big announcements that we have to make.
Dun, dun, dun.
First off.
Or is it exciting announcements? Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Well, I just had 3 Oreos. I'm on a sugar high. I got the Halloween ones. Those are double stuffed, by the way. Continue.
You know what? Let's just do the announcement music first.
That's better than mine.
It's way better than yours. All right. So the first one we got is... You guys are so freaking awesome. You're awesome. I love everything that you guys bring to the table. And because you have given us so much as it relates to listener feedback, we can't have any more listener feedback.
What?
But we can't have listener feedback on this episode. We're going to have now 2 episodes of The Living Reminders per week. 1, just us talking. Maybe some listener feedback spread out here and there, but we're going to have a special episode for just you guys, just your listener feedback, maybe some more thoughts from Mary and I as we got a chance to step back and watch the episode again, perhaps. But we're gonna have 2 episodes of The Living Reminders, which I'm very happy about.
Hopefully this like condenses the time. Not everybody has an hour and a half drive to work time.
We realized that maybe we went a little overboard in the first 3 episodes.
And also we wanted to make sure that those of you who have fantastic comments or theories or ideas do get to have your voice heard. And it's been hard. It's been hard for us to select. So these episodes going forward are going to be Blake and Mary, and then later on in the week are going to be more listener feedback sent to.
So I'm really happy about that. The second big announcement that we have is that if you really, really, really loved the episode Off Ramp, you're going to be pretty happy. You want to know why you're going to be pretty happy?
Why?
Because we're going to be having Amy Brenneman on the show.
Yeah.
Amy Brenneman, i.e. Lori, on the show to speak with us. I think by the time you listen to this, it might be towards the end of the week.
Yeah.
So maybe Thursday or Friday, we'll have that episode.
Oh my God, so
published.
We're going to have 3 episodes this week.
So this is the big news. You're going to have 3 amazing, action-packed, award-winning, Emmy award-winning, Tony nominated episodes.
Because I'm singing?
Yes, we're Tony nominated. I didn't know if you knew that, of The Living Reminders. So I'm really happy about this. I'm so excited. And that's that. All right, my love, what did we forget?
All right, so the blonde lady last episode, who I just kept calling the blonde lady, her name is Susan.
She's got a name.
Okay, and we know this because the actress who plays Susan actually listened to the episode and told us. So special thanks to Heather Kafka for listening. Kafka. I like that.
This is actually what she had to say. She commented on our webpage. So if you get a chance, go to the forums on the webpage and leave comments. We see them. We talk to you guys. This is what Heather had to say about the character Susan. She said Carl, the director, Carl Franklin, who directed the episode, and Heather, they talked about the Any Day Now note and her decision to end it all as her attempt to end the fear and pain by taking control of the day that the end would come. Her life does feel false and absurd. She is suffering from post-traumatic stress and severe depression. So the decisions she's making are not sound, but in suicide, there is an element of taking control back. She will decide the day they depart. She will decide for the first time since the departure. In other words, it's not a reaction that the suicide. It's an action. Mm-hmm. It's not an I can't take it anymore. It's an I can take it back and make this happen. So that's what she was working with anyway. And it's kind of resignation.
Yeah.
And power.
You know, reading this too, it made me think, you know, obviously she cared so much about her family.
Mm-hmm.
She went and hugged her son and loves her husband and was so nervous that her husband were never going to get her. And I also thought too, how scared she must have been that it might happen again, the departure,
mm-hmm.
and that she might lose her husband and son, and that she couldn't manage or bear life losing them.
Correct.
And how this way she made sure that they did it together so that no one would have to live without another person.
And here's the larger question. When you have admitted to yourself and to the world that the world has ended, how do you come back from that? Right? How do you come back from being in a group where they have this rhetoric that everything that you do is useless? And you can't just all of a sudden come back and say, hey, everything is awesome. It's not. How do you even fill that void? Is it even possible? And I'm not sure if you can. I'm not sure if there is any filling. No matter how many magic hugs that Tom gives, you are not going to fill that void. Something will always be eating at you because it's embedded in your brain by that point.
Well, it's
right?
Grief. It's still death and grief. I mean, think about it. You lost your mother at a young age, and yet you still think about her every single day.
I haven't
yet lost my parents.
Yep.
And I never was close to my grandparents who passed away when I was very young, if not before I was born. So I don't go throughout every single day thinking about someone who is no longer with me,
mm-hmm.
and carrying a little bit of that mourning or grief around, but you must. And here it's like extreme because they don't even have an answer. You know, you think about your friends or if you have lost someone that you care about, whether it was a battle to cancer or if it was something really quick, a car accident, mm-hmm. or just someone got sick and they were gone the next day.
You can point to it. You can point to something,
yes.
and say, that's what happened. And you know what? Ultimately, I got a kind of idea where they are. Like, you know, if you're a believer, then you know that they're in heaven or that they're in hell or they're in Valhalla or they're wherever the hell they are there, right? But when the departure happens, first of all, you don't know what happened to them. You don't know why they left and you don't know where they went. It's the most frustrating thing in the world. And that's why when the guilty remnant says, hey, look, I got proof. What you do, it don't make sense. Everything you do, stupid. And there's actually something that they can point to. They got paper. They got something tactile. Whereas something, if you're just saying, no, everything's fine. We're just going to whistle past the graveyard here. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard, I think, for somebody to come out of all of that.
So thank you so much to Heather for listening. A, how freaking cool is that?
I know.
B, for interacting with us to give us a little bit of that extra tidbit about Susan's character.
It's an honor. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to us again, thank you.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, kiddo. What do you got?
Orange sticker. I got this one. Because there's orange stickers on the houses to prove that nobody departed.
That's right.
And, of course, at the very end, Michael is scraping off the sticker because he believes his sister did depart.
That's right. Excellent job. That's fantastic. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're getting better at this. I've realized for the past three episodes, I haven't even given any insight, really, to the meanings of these episode titles.
I don't even need a co-host. I'm kidding.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
Well, Mrs. Solo, solo host.
Han Solo.
Han Solo over here.
Oh my God, by the way, one of my friends is dressing up as Han's duet. Because there's going to be two of them. So cute.
BT Dubs, yes. I was Han Solo at a Halloween party that we just had.
Yes.
And she, Mrs. Larson across the way from me was Princess Leia.
That's right.
So we were really cute. Well, no, you're the solo artist here.
Oh no, I'm juggling a baby.
Okay. Yes, Felicity is with us indeed again this time. So sorry for if you hear her cackle or babble or cry or pretty much anything that babies do. That's what happens. The orange sticker written by Damon Lindelof and Tom Spezialy. Now, who is Tom Spezialy? He is the brand new executive producer that was brought on to The Leftovers this season. Yeah, so you may know this guy because he was a writer on Desperate Housewives.
Oh,
And he and Damon Lindelof basically saved ABC back in the day. So that's probably how they have this relationship. So I think he only has one writing credit for this entire season, and it is this episode.
I just like that his name means special.
Is that really what it is?
Yeah.
Wow, look at you.
I think so. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it means something else. But to me, it looks like it means special.
Oddly enough, Damon Lindelof, I think, has a writing credit on each and every one of the episodes this season so far, on 4 episodes. And I think he has a writing credit on every episode going forward. So that's actually kind of cool. He didn't have that last season, to my recollection.
Well, that was probably a goal of his. He was like, you know what? Even if it's just one sentence, I'm going to write something in every episode. That's my goal.
And this was also directed by Tom Shankland. And you may not know him as he has done... he only has one episode for this season for the Leftovers. But as a director, he has done other things such as The Missing, the latest show on Stars that has garnered some Emmy Award winners, and he's done a bunch of other little things like The Children and The Fades. So nothing too serious, but I feel like he did an excellent job.
He did an awesome job. I liked it a lot.
Especially in that shot when Noor kind of falls, how the camera kind of like tilts with her. I'm sure in real life the fall wasn't that bad, but the way that the camera just panned and it shot down with her, unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, that was cool.
And the other really important shot that I loved from this show was at the very end, spoiler alert, when Jill is out looking out over the terrace and you can see... The camera panned from her view, and it shows her sight line the whole way as it pans to the left.
Oh, and all those bugs.
And the bugs with the light. But it was, like I said, it was suspenseful. You weren't sure what you were going to see. Was this something that they wanted to reveal? Was this something scary that was going to happen?
I thought it was about the bugs at first. I was like, oh no.
There's bugs.
Are locusts coming?
I know.
Where's Noah?
Hey, Noor was actually referenced in, oh no. Yeah, well, the Ark was. Yeah, so there you go.
Well, that's why I thought. I saw the bugs and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, look at you, Infernal.
Oh, wait, it wasn't Noah. It was Moses.
No, Noah. Noah in the Ark.
Yeah, but the locusts were Moses. Darn it. Oh, I don't go to church anymore.
Yeah, no.
Shoot. Sorry. Church all of you people who do go, you're shaking your finger at me saying, Mary, you're missing up locust. That's Moses.
So yeah, it was suspenseful in the way that it panned. And finally, you didn't know what you were looking at until all of a sudden it turns. And then there's Michael scraping the orange sticker off of the front of the house. Really good stuff. But the guy that I really wanted to bring out in all of this is the cinematographer. Now, cinematographers don't get a lot of love in the world of filmmaking, but more importantly in television film making. And the guy that I want to bring out, his name is Todd McMullen. What I really noticed about this entire episode was the cinematography, the coloring, the blues, the lights on all the buildings shining up, the light that coming down onto the people. Most of this was shot at night, so you had a lot of beautiful reds and blues coming out of the houses and on the walls and in the nights in the moonlight, and you had like this the light flare coming into the camera. Gorgeous stuff all episode. One of the things that reminded me most was the thing that stuck out to me most was when Kevin was walking to the apartment building and walking back. All the apartment buildings were shaded in blue and all of the windows that were lit were in orange, and beautiful, yes. Like really, really gorgeous filmmaking. This show is quickly becoming probably the most detail oriented and well crafted show I've seen in a long time.
Ooh.
It really is, because not only is the writing good, but now it's starting to look good. It's starting to have that same look, the same effect that like Breaking Bad had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where everything in the frame had a purpose, every color had a purpose. And I like that a lot. Game of Thrones was like that. And a new show that I'm starting to watch now, it's not new, but is Hannibal. Hannibal excels at having all the different colors of the palette. And it is just beautiful. Everything that you see on Hannibal, every color, every instance has a purpose, just like The Leftovers does right now. And I was blown away by what this guy Todd McMullen did in this episode. I was really pleased with that.
Let's talk about this episode.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, earthquake, whatever we want to call it. But for right now, we're calling it an earthquake.
Sure.
Poor Nora. Honey Badger came back.
Oh, man. Honey Badger. You know, some people have tried to usurp the Honey Badger moniker.
Who?
John Murphy, Amy Brenneman.
Oh, yeah.
Some people have tried to take the Honey Badger moniker away from Carrie Coon. And they don't got nothing. I was, when we watched this episode, as a matter of fact, we were talking about this when Carrie Coon wakes up from when she passed out and she walks outside and she sees the dogs.
Oh my God. Yes, the dogs.
I said to her, like, we need the crazy violin music again. Mm-hmm. We need the crazy violin, like Nora music.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Did it happen again? Are the people gone?
Yeah. And she's calling desperately.
Oh my gosh,
911.
I love it. Plugging in the TV, trying to get the Wi-Fi.
Oh, fuck. Oh, that desperation. Think of that. Think about when she wakes up. She's back into that universe that she tried to escape. Everything that she tried to get rid of. She's now with Kevin. She's now in Miracle. She has a new daughter. She has this new dog. She's got a whole new life, a $3 million house. And no matter what she does, she's back into it. She can't take another loss the way that she did.
No.
And it's not like, oh, one of the things that I really loved was when they said, oh, did you experience the earthquake? She's like, no, it's not the fucking earthquake. Did they go? Did they depart? Mm-hmm. Are they gone? My boyfriend. Carrie Coon. I know we shouldn't care about the Emmys. I know we shouldn't care about them because the Emmys are not a good barometer for what is quality and what is you know, effective television. I mean, God, Game of Thrones won Best Drama this season when it really had no business winning Best Drama.
Stop.
Listen, it's the truth. HBO, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but it's the truth. If this woman does not get nominated for an Emmy, just based off of this scene alone, I may freak out. I may freak out. Do you feel the same way as me?
I don't freak out about this kind of stuff because I don't believe in it. So I don't worry too much about Emmys.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. Yeah. I really don't blame you. The Emmys suck.
You know what it's like?
What?
It's like testing that they give in public schools. It doesn't really matter. It's like they're doing it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect your grade.
But what did you feel when you saw the dogs come out?
Okay, well, I just loved Nora in general going, losing her shit. But then the dogs, that freaked me out because the dogs went crazy when the departure happened.
Yeah.
And you see this dog and then you heard other dogs. And that's when I went, oh my God, it was another departure.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not, but I'm thinking it is.
Yeah, and that's what the show is trying to get you to think of, right? It's this whole season so far is what you do when you ascribe meaning to something.
Mm-hmm.
What do you ascribe meaning to someone's palm print? What's the meaning you ascribe to dogs? Or seeing Kevin with the cinder block? Or the cave woman just losing all of her people because the cave collapses? What's the meaning of the eagle? And the dogs are a prime example of that. Because maybe, hey, it's an earthquake. Dogs are going to freak out. They're going to bark. They're going to run.
The earthquake happened.
Yeah. You know, the earthquake happens and she goes outside.
Yeah.
And she checks on Erica.
Right.
And she's like, hey, are you okay? Evie, you know. And then, by the way, Erica takes a phone call from whom, by the way? Because you didn't see that in the first episode.
No, I think it was one of the other parents. Remember the other parents called and they said, hey, I thought Evie was with our daughter.
They were all together. They were all together. This was after John leaves.
Oh.
And then you see at the end of the first episode, it obviously ends with Erica.
Sitting in silence.
The cricket happens, yada, yada. Great.
Yeah.
But she takes a phone call. You don't know who the phone call is from. Now, is that something that is just there and maybe that's the reason to get her back inside the house? Or are we going to ascribe meaning to mm-hmm. this phone call, right? Is that why she's sitting there so lonely? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
So in the end, Nora's cranky mm-hmm. all episode, goes and even talks to her brother Matt and mm-hmm. is like, is this freaking real? We'll talk about Matt's story in a second, but she's just really upset And I love how it took her a little while to really figure out some solutions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sitting here and you can't help that she's taking it out on Kevin. It's not Kevin's fault that he sleepwalks and that he maybe tried to commit suicide. It's she didn't mean to do that.
Do you blame her for being... all right. As a woman,
yeah.
Is she mad at him? Because it was icy.
She thinks she's mad at him, but it's just her emotions are being stuck on him. And that's why at the end of the episode, she comes to her senses and she says, really, it's that I'm so afraid.
Yeah.
And so she, you know, does the handcuffs. That's what it is.
She can't wake up alone again.
That it comes off as anger because she's angry because she's doesn't know if it's going to happen again. Nobody has answers still.
Yeah.
And then it gets blown up in her freaking face again with Virgil when he's like, I'm sorry for your loss. It's just, Nora can't catch a break today. Mm-hmm. For the 24 hours, she cannot catch a break. It's just thrown in her face again. Here she is. She thought she was going to be safe. And now scary stuff is happening. And even though Kevin's okay, three girls are missing. Someone reminds her about her past. Who knows? Some psychic man.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just having a bad day, man. She's having a bad day. She needs that liquor. That's the Nora story.
And how about, I love everything about Nora and Kevin. I love them. I want them to succeed. I don't want her to die as per my sudden theory of the week that I had a couple of weeks ago. They're just so freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Right? And I know that's so coarse to say, but they are. I just love their relationship to how they're honest they are with each other. Like when she says to him, I can't wake up alone again like that. And then when she takes the handcuffs and puts it on his wrist, like...
I'd do the same thing.
I know. And that is something that you would do, right? When you're married, if you're married, you understand. If you're not married, you're going to understand. You just have to do anything. It doesn't matter how bad it can get. It doesn't matter how awful things can be. You have to talk. And you got to do stuff that maybe you wouldn't necessarily want to do. And you got to try different shit. And hey, maybe the handcuffs are what matters. Maybe the handcuffs are what happens. And we're going to be stuck in this together. That's going to be the end. No matter what, we're in this together.
Hope you find the key.
And, yeah, I know. And then again, it's the humor there. The humor like, oh, I hope you find the key. And they both laugh at each other like, oh my. It's almost like that first scene when they're admitting to each other the things that they've done. Like, oh, I got shot. I hire hookers to shoot me.
Okay, but you like love this relationship, but Kevin is not honest. He is not honest with Nora.
He is and he isn't. I mean, would you be honest if you saw Patty and she was talking to you?
Yep.
Why?
Because they've already thrown everything else on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nora would be like, all right. I mean, he already says he sleepwalks.
Yeah, okay.
And if he were to say, my dad heard voices, this is what's going on with me, with Patty. I don't know. Maybe he hasn't told her because up until now, he's been trying to think that Patty isn't real.
That's what I'm saying, ultimately,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because he doesn't want to admit to himself that Patty is real. He doesn't, because he even says that to Patty when he finally talks, and we played that clip at the beginning of the episode. Patty is there. In whatever form that she is in, she is there. Right? But when you're in the thick of it and you don't want to admit to yourself that she is there, and if you feel like, oh man, if I just hold that information back, maybe I can convince myself. So if you're trying to convince yourself that she is not there, why would you inject someone else into that feeling?
Well, there's this whole idea about ghosts that if you do not believe in ghosts, like mm-hmm. certain religions don't believe in ghosts, that they will not actually be haunted or affected by ghosts.
Yeah.
But, for example, Catholics who believe in like straight up demons too and mm-hmm. exorcisms, they are more likely to be preyed upon because it is what they believe. Now, if this is all made up and it's just people in their heads, then that's one thing. Or if it's real and if you are only affected because it is something you believe in, then that's that other theory. So that's what Kevin's kind of going for, is he's thinking, maybe if I just don't believe, maybe yeah. if I just don't believe, it's going to go away. But the truth of the matter is that he does.
Sure.
He does believe.
He does believe. And you know, I know we went back to the conversation that we were talking about, Patty, and you had this great idea that Kevin went back to dig up the body to make sure that she was still there, right? She was still there. And she didn't come out of the grave. No, she didn't become resurrected. She is probably just a figment of my imagination. That was for Kevin. But as we've gone on, and as the show has gone on, I think that was more for the viewer. I think it was more for the viewer to prove that indeed she is dead. And that somehow, no matter what, in the end, if you eliminate everything, you eliminate the fact that she is in fact dead. Her body was decomposing in the ground. That is proof that she's either a figment of his imagination, or she's a ghost, or she's something else entirely. She's something else completely that's off the grid that we don't know yet. Because did Dirty Santa see Patty?
What do you think?
I don't know. and that's really bad to say when you have a podcast about this show.
Did he see Patty, or did he just see Kevin talking to thin air and said, hey, who's your friend?
Let me preface all this by saying, Mary and I, usually we will talk about the episode prior to our episode here on the podcast. This is a little bit of a trial and error kind of thing, because Mary and I have not talked about this episode yet. So if it sounds more like a conversation between she and I, that's the reason for it. So we're just kind of going with the flow. So we're just testing it. We're going to see what happens. We wanted this to be as authentic as possible for you guys. I don't think that he saw her. I don't think that he saw her because... all right, you know what? I'll go back. I do think that he saw her. I do think that he saw her because this guy sent a letter to David Burton.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
Dirty Santa. I think he saw her because he sent a letter to David Burton. Now, David Burton, as we all know, is the guy that had died and come back in Australia and says he can't die again. And we have Kevin Garvey Sr. going to Australia, and somehow, some way, these things, as we talked about last episode, are connected.
Oh my God, I hope season 3 takes place in Australia.
Oh, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it? Good
just
day,
an
mate.
Idea.
Shrimp on the bobby. So, all these things are connected. Kevin Sr. hears voices, and he's going to Australia because he's finally doing what they are telling him to do, which is why he's out of the nut house. So you can't tell me that David Burton, Kevin Sr., and Dirty Santa are connected. They are somehow. And if we're going to go with the idea that Kevin is obviously seeing Patty and talking to her, maybe Dirty Santa has an inkling or has the vision or the forethought to know who Patty is, what she is, and why she's there. Although I will allow for the opposite opinion, which is...
that he's just being friendly and saying, hey there, you all right?
Who's your friend, bro? You all right?
Can you bring me some breakfast food? Because I really like eggs.
How much you been drinking?
Okay, so Patty.
Yes. Now,
Patty does a lot in this episode. Patty, of course, is talking to Kevin the entire time, bothering him or whatever. And he finally acknowledges her. But before this, the spot that made it for me.
Yep.
Was the hot or cold game.
Oh, yes.
Where's your phone? You're cold. I know where your phone is, and I know what happened to those girls.
Yep.
You're cold, cold, cold. You're getting warmer. You're getting really hot. There
you're on fire.
No way he would have found that sludgy phone without Patty's help.
Well, here's the thing. Could Kevin have found it? Is she part of his subconscious? Is that just his subconscious coming out?
Could be.
In him. Does she know it because he knows it, but he doesn't know that he knows it, right?
Well, he was just reaching in mud.
But then she says, Kevin, don't get in the car. Don't get in the car. And Kevin did not know that a car was coming. He didn't hear it. You didn't hear it until all of a sudden she said it.
Except it was a truck.
Well, whatever. Come on.
I just wish she had said, don't get in the truck.
I agree. That would have been a little bit better.
Another reason why this wasn't a 5. I'm telling you, this whole truck scene pissed me off right from that moment. I was like, it's not even a car.
Oh, my God. Oh, you know.
Damon, as a writer, should have caught that.
You know, you call us a lot of things, but professional ain't one of them.
Okay, yes. But she does call the fact that there is going to be a vehicle.
Yes.
She could have used that word.
A moving vehicle.
A moving vehicle approaching.
She could have said spaceship, but
and
she didn't.
Probably shouldn't have gone into it because why? I don't know. It was a weird plot point. Patty might be a writer.
No, because now she, now Kevin is exposing himself to the Murphys in a way that shouldn't be happening. He's now intertwined with John Murphy in a way such that he's
on like the bro level.
Yeah.
But why?
Because I think John Murphy's desperate. Like, you heard the conversation that he had with the other firemen, right? Saying, listen, you guys wouldn't come with me. This guy has my daughters, or I think that he has my daughters. There was a palm print on the car, and it's a message. It's a message from Isaac to me that the palm print, he knows where my daughters are. And they wouldn't help him. That's when like they were driving out of Miracle and people banging on the windows.
Oh, so
scary. And then the fire truck comes up and pulls ahead
to stop
of them.
Him.
Right, correct. John Murphy couldn't get anybody to come with him, but he needed somebody there with him. He needed somebody to go with him to help him out.
Why?
I mean, listen, if you're going to show up alone, if you're going to get in a fight with somebody and bad shit's going to happen, you want backup.
Yeah, he did bring a bat to a gunfight, so yeah. It's a good thing he had someone to bring
him
home.
How's that working for you, bro?
He needed a driver. He needed a designated driver, and they were both drunk.
I know.
Not right. Good.
And so...
Where was Kevin in his cop shoes right there? Oh, you're drinking and driving?
I know.
Excuse me?
What are you doing? And I like that response that John Murphy gave too, which was, yeah, well, I thought you didn't drink. Yeah, my daughter disappeared.
Yep.
And everything that you need to know is said right there.
Yep.
Everything. Now, see, again, this is the problem. John is going down a path that is going to turn ugly. Mm-hmm. And Kevin is spiraling down with him. And he's trying to get out. You see him try to get out of the...
Toxic friendship. My mom used to call them that. Toxic friendships. Don't be friends with that girl, Mary. She's a little promiscuous. That's a toxic friendship. Okay, Mom.
And really what's happening here is that ultimately, somehow, some way, John Murphy's going to find out that palm print, that belongs to Kevin Garvey. It's going to happen. And now that... It's intertwined where John is starting to rely on Kevin to help him out mm-hmm. with this stuff. And Kevin was there during the little surgery with Erica. And he sees the present. And this town's going to change that from what Erica says to John. This is going to be an issue. This is going to be a big issue. This is going to be the confrontation or the conflict that I think is the backbone of this story going forward.
You know what I really wanted?
What?
And we might get it. But so, of course, there was that big fight with the bat and the gun and oh my God, get him out of here. Blah, 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 blah. Kevin, of course, is grabbing John.
Mm-hmm.
John, who's profusely bleeding.
Yep.
And I really want a bloody handprint from Kevin to have ended up on Isaac's wall.
Oh, that would blow my mind.
Because he was touching John. He's like moving all around. And I would love for us to see Isaac next week and him see this bloody palm print.
Yes. Oh my God. Listen, because they're not going to cast this guy to just have one little palm reading and burn his house down. This guy is going to be part of something.
And he liked the color red. Remember, he was like, oh, I should do red.
Yes.
Red is blood.
Oh man, sweetheart. Every once in a while, you really impress me. You really, really, really do impress me. And today, this is when.
High five.
Give me a high five. Come on.
Boom.
That's my girl.
So, I mean, Erica's smoking something real good. Let me tell you, she is way too chill for everything that's going on.
Yes.
I don't know. First off.
Well, because she knows her husband is, I can't say a bad guy.
But even what she said about her daughter. Oh, she's just playing a joke. She's in the woods with her friends and maybe
that's
just
denial.
Oh, no,
she says she wouldn't just play a joke. She's better than that.
Oh, I thought she said she might be running around the woods.
Yeah, no. And that's when she says, this is the problem. Things are going to change here because Evie is better than just playing a joke. She's better than just giggling in the woods. She wouldn't do that. And that changes the fabric of the town. This is going to change the fabric of the town.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Like, you have Patty, saying this at the end of the episode, saying, you know, oh, you know, Erica, she's right, man. And what things are going to change. And she starts singing that that song, Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley.
So good.
And, you know, and if, for those of you who don't know the song, I'm just going to play it real quick.
Feel it, feel it.
Oh, yeah. Never gonna give you up. So this is Rick Astley and Never Gonna Give You Up.
There you go. All right, let's talk about another pairing.
Well, before we do that, I do just want to talk about the words and Never Gonna Give You Up. Because, you know, Patty is singing these words, these lyrics, and she does it twice. When Kevin finds the phone. And when at the end of the episode, after she tells him that the girls, in fact, did disappear, they vanished, they're gone.
Poof.
Poof. The lyrics are, we're no strangers to love. You know the rules and so do I. A full commitment's what I'm thinking of. You wouldn't get this from any other guy. I just want to tell you how I'm feeling. Got to make you understand. And then it says, never going to give you up. Never going to let you down. Never going to run around and desert you. Never gonna make you cry. Never gonna say goodbye. Never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
What do you take this as?
Well, let me finish. We've known each other for so long. Your heart's been aching, but you're too shy to say it. Inside, we both know what's been going on. We know the game and we're gonna play it. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. You know, the use of music in this show has continued and will just continue to blow my mind. Because that song, it's a joke to a lot of people. It's like when you get pranked, you all of a sudden you play that song, you get Rickrolled. But when you start looking at the lyrics for what they are, it's actually kind of creepy. It's kind of creepy in a Patty versus Kevin kind of way.
Yeah.
And sorry, what do you think about that, Felicity? Think about anything good?
She's grabbing the mic. She's like, oh my God, that Patty. She's singing it.
Oh my God. I love Rick Astley so much. So, you know, I just wanted to comment on those words because they're very important. And I do have a theory about this, about the words, and I'm going to withhold them because I'm saving them, unlike my beautiful wife who never withholds her theories, I have that for my sudden theory of the week, so I will withhold my analysis.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about teenage angst.
Okay.
Which there isn't anymore, thank God.
No Kim Bauer syndrome.
Right? Jill is finally manageable, that I can handle her.
Yep.
And she and Michael are having some bonding moments.
Yep.
And Jill is like the calm force of this duo.
It's good to see. It's good to see that this guy, this kid, Michael, is struggling with all of this. And somehow, some way, he knows that they've disappeared, that the sister has disappeared with her friends. Somehow, he just gets it.
That weird twin thing.
And how about that, too? That conversation where Erica was saying that twins can be born 2 months apart? Like, whoa?
I think they did that to remind you that they are twins, because I bet you Michael's going to have some like weird twin thing go on.
Right? And here's the other thing, too. Michael is a devout follower of Christ and God and everything, and he is saying they departed. So there, it shows you that there is a faction of people out there that who are Christ followers, who are Christians, that do believe the departure happened, and it may not necessarily be something that is either religious or not, or maybe it could be religious. Maybe they're accepting it as the way that it is.
Or, you know, yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean?
One thing's for certain. If it was a departure, that spring water sure does nothing.
No, or maybe they departed because they were messing around with the spring water.
They peed. They peed in the pond.
And maybe it's telling because, you know, when all the people rushed the crime scene as Kevin was trying to find his phone, they're saying, oh shit, like we got to get all these people out of here. And Erica's saying, no, let him go. It's just water. Maybe that attitude and that idea of it's just water, like that Evie was having, hey, it's just water, maybe that's what gets her in trouble. And I know that goes against what I'm saying, that maybe Evie did not depart, she's faking it to help expose the town. That's very possible too. But if I'm gonna go under the assumption that she did depart, listen, they showed the cave woman for a reason, right? They showed her there to ascribe a specific meaning, as we've been talking about all episode of this podcast. The water has a specific meaning. They wouldn't tell you everybody wants this water for nothing. Kevin, as he steps out of the emergency room, steps on the water vial and breaks the vial, and the water comes spilling out. Something tells me that the departure obviously has to do with the water, and the last bits of water are being taken, and it's breaking. Everything is falling apart with this water, and maybe it's the departure. Maybe it's Evie disappearing. Right?
Yeah. You know, when he stepped on that vial, it was interesting to see the square. It looked like a riot had happened.
Yes.
You know, it was usually so pristine. And of course, they said they had to stop the buses because of everything. And people were getting riotish. Is that a word?
Riotous.
Yeah. Outside of the gate. But really, seeing town like that made me kind of weirded out.
It looked like a ghost town almost.
Yeah.
Because people were coming in and out, and they had to shut the town down, and that's why everybody was pissed off on the outside. Listen, they're already pissed off as it is because they're not coming into the town. When you shut that town down and nobody can come in, they're not going to be happy. And that's ultimately what happens. Here's something that's important, too. John Murphy sees Kevin for what he is, even though he didn't know that he was a cop. Kevin said, "Oh, I'm a cop." He's like, "Oh, no shit." John Murphy sees this issue of Kevin and why he's here. Oh, looking for a fresh start. No, no. What you're looking for? What you're looking for is to be safe. And here's the issue. You ain't safer here any more than you would be anywhere else. There are no miracles in Miracle. And you finally find out that John... He was in the clink when the departure happened. And then people started to take advantage of his town when he came back. And he realized that things were happening around him that he couldn't control and he wasn't having anything of it. So is this the thing where he's just a self-appointed leader? I mean, because you saw how that park ranger, by the way, who's in charge of the whole rigmarole, reacted when John Murphy says, nah, that guy is my neighbor. Kevin Garvey is my neighbor. And he's like, oh, John, yeah, okay, no problem, I'm sorry. After the park ranger was giving Kevin a hard time about his address, right? Where he's like, oh, what's your address? I think I live on Stanton.
I just moved in yesterday. That's what I would have said.
Yeah.
I literally just bought the house and moved in yesterday.
Right. So, I mean, you see this reaction. This guy has a hold on this town. And everybody is afraid of him. You saw the guy's reaction, the park ranger's reaction. It was crazy. He just it takes him at his word, and he was almost a little scared of him. So it reminds me who appointed John Murphy to be this guy, and why is he like that? I don't know, and that's the beauty of this show, and this episode again. It continues to be a perfectly balanced episode. Whether or not, like, here's the issue that you have. You know your show is going really well when you have all these different stories. Like, you have the Murphy story, you have the Garvey story, and then, by the way, you have Tom and Lori. And you get fully enveloped in all of these things, and you realize everything that they're telling me, I want to watch. Like, I remember last episode we said, oh, you know, I like this episode, but I want to get back to Miracle. But I realized last night after I watched this great episode, I loved it. But now I kind of want to get back to
Mapleton.
I want
to see Tom hug somebody.
I want to see what happens. I want to see what happens with Lori. I want to know if she gets in trouble for stealing the kid's laptop the way that she did. I mean, obviously it was hers, but I want to know if the sleazy Russian guy comes back after her.
I don't think he will.
Well, whether or not he does or doesn't, I want to know. I want to know if she still continues to save more people. And this is a great problem for this show to have.
Yeah.
The way that they're giving out the answers to certain things, it's letting you know that there is a plan for this episode and there is a plan for the season and that they're just going to give it out in dribs and drabs. And you just have to be patient with it. This isn't, like I said last episode, this isn't The Blacklist. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be laid out. It's not going to be just given to you. You gotta work with it, right?
Yeah.
You gotta work, and like the whole thing with Kevin. Oh yes, the whole thing when Kevin is walking up to the apartment building, and they're gonna go talk to Isaac, and Patty is with him, and she's saying, you know, my husband Neil, he told me that he would work late at the office. Yeah, first of all, why don't you get some fucking originality? But he would tell me that he was working late at the office. I wanted to go see him. I wanted to see what was happening. I was afraid that he would leave me. But what I saw was him buck naked and a lady with a shirt and only a shirt taking a shit on his chest. A shit, Kevin. Never one time in 17 years of marriage did that little fucker ever ask me to take a shit on him. And here's what that's calling back to. Do you remember? And one of the, I forget which episode. Oh, it was Garvey's at their best. I forget which. When Lori and Patty are driving back. Oh, it was Gladys. When Lori and Patty are driving back after they have the conversation in the diner in season one, and Patty says, oh, you can talk, Lori, yada, yada. And as they're driving back, they take a bag of shit and they put it on her ex-husband's door.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's calling back to. That's the reason why she left a bag of shit.
There we go.
On his doorstep.
There you go.
Because of this story. That's what I'm getting at. You're gonna have to go along to get along with this show, and I can't get enough. I'm just, it is by far right now the best show on television.
Yes,
I mean without question.
Making you think that much.
I really loved Better Call Saul. I did. I really loved Bloodline. I was obsessed with Bloodline for a long time, but this show, it just grabs you. It grabs you, and this is another episode. In a fine line of episodes that have already come from the beginning of this season, right? The first three episodes were great. Now this episode comes up and it just takes you back. It takes you back to what this show is about and why it is the way that it is. And in the stories that are coming out of it, it's connecting them all slowly. This four episode run is fantastic. A much better footing than what happened in the first season, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't you think so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because, the first season didn't really get going, I mean, in earnest, until after Gladys. After Gladys, everybody loves the Matt Jameson episode. And I get it. It makes sense. Two boats in a helicopter. The show didn't really gain its steam until after Gladys.
Yes.
And then we had Guest. And then we had Soulless Retired Feet. And then we had Garvey's at their best and Cairo. And then we had Prodigal Son Returns. That's when it had to go. And I wonder if it's because now finally the reason why this show has finally caught its footing is because now they're off book. Now they can get away from the construct that the book has created from the first season.
Well, also they needed to create that universe. It takes a long time. This is a very unique situation. They needed to thoroughly explain that nobody knows what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while. Most shows that have really interesting and unique plots,
mm-hmm.
they take some time.
And here's the other thing too. You know, the departure happened in the first season, right? And I remember when we first started watching The Leftovers, we were saying to each other, I don't care that these people departed. I mean, yeah, it's sad. It sucks. 140 million people gone. But I don't know anybody. And eventually you came to know some people. Like you knew about Nora's family. You knew about the people who had the mentally challenged son eventually. You knew all those things. But again, you didn't experience it with them. You saw the baby in the first episode, and yeah, the baby departed. But again, you don't know the mother. You don't know why she's there. You don't know her relationship with her family. You just didn't know anything. It sucked to see a baby go, but again, you didn't know. But what now this show has done, it has taken the departure. Whether or not it's actually real or not, And it has given you a micro look at it, as opposed to a macro look with the 140 million people. It's now turned into Evie is gone. And even though you only knew Evie so much, it's still a lot more prescient and present in your brain that Evie, you know this woman's name, you've seen her exist. It's taken that departure and making it a lot more personalized for you.
Yeah.
Right?
I love it. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. That's what this show is doing. It's taking everything that you need to know and giving it to you in little bits. Mm-hmm. In little bits, and then taking it down. Because it started off too big in the first season. It started off too big for its own good. It started off with every character. You saw every character in every episode. You saw the departure, the 140 million people, all that. It was too big. And now it's bringing it down. Even though it took place in a little town, here we are with what we got in Miracle, which is great.
All right. Those are our thoughts.
Well, my love, this is actually kind of awkward because I'm ready to go into the listener feedback. Oh, actually, no, I do have one more thing. Jill actually says something there in that conversation that she has with Nora after Nora runs into Virgil and buys the cigarettes and the booze. And she says, oh, I'm enabling my boyfriend. She goes home with Jill and says, they start talking about Kevin and the sleepwalking. And why do you think he's sleepwalking? Well, because, you know, he was in the town and he was in charge of the town and all the town was going to shit. And he was starting to feel the effects. That's what at least Jill says to Nora. But Nora comes back and says, yeah, but he's not in charge anymore. And what Jill says back to her is, well, wherever you are, there you'll be. And wherever you are, there you'll be is a best-selling book by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who talks about meditation and being present in your life and using presence that like to experience where you are, to experience where you at, where you are at. And he uses meditation and it's important because it brings out a state of mindfulness, a condition of being rather than doing, during which you pay attention to the moment rather than the past, the future, all the multitudinous distractions of modern life. So I thought that was a great piece of little info for all of the listeners. But since we're not doing the listener feedback today, I think it's just time to get into the Brian David's Thought of the Week. What do you think, kid? Yep. All right, let's do it.
Mary and Blake, it's Brian David's from the Film Schlubs podcast. Following episode 2, I predicted on the blog how a Nora breakdown was bound to happen. Given her manic and impulsive behavior upon arrival in Miracle, which was illustrated by the home purchase, it was clear that she was just barely holding it together. With the MIT guys telling her another departure was possible, her worst fear was realized when Kevin was absent following the earthquake. And this scene really breaks your heart, since you know she's been through this before with her original family, as well as the Memorial Day fiasco. We did get some answers on the dog question, which I raised before this episode, as we hadn't seen any quarantine dogs yet in town. However, we saw one off its leash, as well as another barking in the distance, so the town isn't keeping all animals out in attempt to maintain their standing. As I've been saying from episode 1 and on, the handprint on the car, which later became Kevin's, is now front and center. John hasn't figured out yet that he should just have Isaac read the handprint for him. John wrongfully assumed it was Isaac leaving the handprint as part of his ominous warning. However, soon enough, the forensics team should be able to determine whose handprint it was, especially if Kevin's fingerprints were taken at the police station upon turning Patty's body in. However, we did not see this happen, so I'm drawing a conclusion here. It's also reasonable to believe that most, if not all, cops have had their fingerprints on file in case they've tampered with evidence. But again, that's just me drawing my own conclusion. The big part of this episode for me was Virgil's run-in with Nora at the convenience store. He's clearly gifted as he knows about Nora's loss already, as well as Kevin's situation. He's a wild card character, as I've coined on the blog, and he'll have a big role in this story's resolution. More importantly, we saw him walk with a cane, which adds further weight to my belief that he is the man John attempted to murder, yet failed, thus explaining why he is maimed. Virgil didn't say his last name either, so it's still possible that Virgil is John's father, also making him Evie's grandfather and the man who is potentially helping Evie with this staged disappearance. However, one thing we can most likely rule out at this point is Michael's involvement. Erica's bathtub story in episode 1 supports this as she says, "This one's up on the sink, trying his hardest not to get wet." In other words, Evie wants to see what would happen, not Michael. Here's another important question. Is Patty a reliable narrator? She was telling the truth about where Kevin's phone was. She was telling the truth about her revolting story involving her ex-husband, Neil. Her pre-departure connection to Lori was also truthful. She also accurately warned Kevin not to get in the truck with John. Yet, does that mean Kevin really did try and kill himself? Did the girls really vanish? Given the theories that Blake and I have both established, we obviously want her to be unreliable. However, was she saying all these things to get Kevin to trust her so she could then unravel him at his core by dropping these last two bombshells on him that simply aren't true? Notice how Erica is speaking to those of us who think Evie is playing a very deep game and planned all this. Erica says she's better than that. But the whole point of this stage disappearance is, in fact, because Evie is better than this. She is better than what John is doing, and she's trying to stop it somehow with Virgil's help. Also, I need everyone's help with the timeline here. We learned in episode 1 that John was in jail when the twins were at least 5 years old. In this episode, we learned that he was in prison during the departure. If the departure was 3 years ago and some change, that means the kids were 14 years old at the time of the departure, assuming they're 17 right now like Jill is. There's 2 to 3 years I can't account for in this equation. Lastly, Isaac says, "There's nothing more dangerous than a man who believes in nothing." This is the reputation John wants to have, but we've seen him act on the contrary. Is John acting this way because he's told to, per the terms of his release from prison? I've always thought that he was beholden to someone and that he's simply doing his master's bidding. But if Virgil is his father, someone we know is gifted, then why would John harm his father before going to jail, before any such arrangement would be made? Is he trying to protect everyone so they don't suffer the fate that Holy Wayne's compound suffered? Did someone try to hurt Virgil over his gift and John simply protected him? There's one piece to this I just can't find right now, but I'm still of the mindset that John isn't quite the villain we think he is. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Follow me, Brian Davids, on Twitter at BDF331. Also catch me on the livingreminders.com blog as I talked about Tommy Garvey's latest move. As always, thank you to Mary and Blake and to you, the audience, for listening.
All right, Brian, thank you so much. As always, we love everything that you have to bring. I just can't get enough of what you got to say, brother. Well, my love, I think now it's time for the sudden theory of the week. Let's do it. Did you hold anything back?
No, I said I think that they really departed. I think that there's going to be... Oh, well, the bloody handprint. That'll be mine.
That's a good one. Oh, man, Felicity. Come on, girl. Here's my sudden theory of the week. Patty. Patty is telling the truth. All of it. Every single bit of what she says, she's telling the truth to Kevin. She told the truth about the phone. She knew about the problems that was going to happen if she got into the car, if Kevin got into the car. And she told you about the girls vanishing. I believe her. And I believe her because of Rick Astley. I believe her because in that song, Never Gonna Give You Up, he says, "Never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you. We know the game and we're gonna play it. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see." Meaning, I'm not gonna tell you a lie. I'm gonna steer you in the right direction. And this show has never given you something and lied to you. It never lied to you about like the bagels in season 1. Kevin found the bagel, right? It never told you that Dean wasn't real. Or that he was real. It never lied to you. It never said, "Oh, hey, get this," and then never mind. It's never given you the reason to think that something at face value isn't what it really is. And I think that's the same case with Patty. I think she's telling the truth about all of it and that the girls did vanish. And even though I'd hate to admit that I'm wrong, I think I am wrong. I think Patty's right. And I think that she's sticking around. And to be honest, I love everything about it. And I'm so happy. And that is my sudden theory of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
Final thoughts. Anything you got, kid?
I'm just pumped. Keep it coming, guys. Keep it coming, Leftovers team.
I know. My final thought is, listen, this show is firing on all cylinders. And I think it's great. The music is great. The writing is great. The directing is great. Everything about it has been super, super top notch so far. And the show is exceeding where it needs to exceed, which is, who is Kevin Garvey when he is not being Kevin Garvey? Who is Kevin Garvey when he's asleep? And it's alluding to this. And it's taking you in places where you don't know where you should go. And it's taking you in places where I don't know what to believe, especially about Kevin and his sanity. And everything about that and where what they want to accomplish has worked for me. So that is my final thought. I think the show is just, it's turning into something that is fantastic.
As always, we want to hear from you. Reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handles are all the same. It is Living Reminders, just one word.
And if the social media isn't enough for you, you can always get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to thelivingreminders.com to see all previous episodes and to join on that forum.
And on thelivingreminders.com, there's a little button that says support on the top part of the webpage. And in the support tab, you can find a bunch of different ways you can actually support the Living Reminders, whether it is donating $1 or $2 or whatever you want to Patreon on a monthly basis, you can do that. Or if you want to give just a one-time donation, you can do that to help us keep this a free podcast for you guys. But the best thing you can do is to just tell a friend. Tell a friend that we exist. Tell a friend that this show exists and that maybe they can become listeners and subscribers to us as well. The other way you can help support us too is going on iTunes, giving us a review and a rating. Please, if you enjoy the show and what we do provides value for you into the Leftovers experience, please give us a review, whether it's 1 star, 2 stars, 5 stars, 4 stars, I don't care. Whatever you think we deserve, just give us the recognition that we're hoping we can get from you. And also, if you can't get enough of the Living Reminders and the Leftovers in general, please go to the Living Reminders blog. Go to thelivingreminders.com and just hit the little button at the top that says blog. And there you'll be able to find all these different great articles about things like, oh, the Postal Service and the Leftovers. And actually, as a matter of fact, even I have written an article there and saying why the most important thing about the Leftovers is not the departure. There's a lot of great conjecture and theories and ideas all there on the Living Reminders blog. And please, please, please go there and take a listen. And don't forget, guys, we will be having from now on very special episodes of just listener feedback for you guys. So please call 503-454-6730 and you'll be able to get on to the very special episode for listener feedback. Well, for now, for Mary Larson, my wife, who's taking care of my beautiful daughter, my name's Blake. Ladies and gentlemen, we're the Living Reminders, and we're still here.